My name is Jessica, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jessica.
And it's funny that I'm speaking at this meeting because the first time I came here, I had about 60 days sober. I was just telling my friend Orion this, and someone quoted the Bible from speaking up here, the 10-minute speaker. And I left that meeting, and I almost drank because I was like, fuck that. This is not a religious program. You should not be quoting the fucking Bible up here. And I was like, I will never go back to that meeting again. And then I came one other time with someone else who really liked this meeting, and I was like, I don't know. And then Chelsea asked me to speak, and I was like, all right, I'll try it. I'll give it one more shot. I trust Chelsea's opinion. And so I'm happy to be here. I'm really grateful to be sober. I appreciate that this meeting reads a part in the book more about alcoholism. I was actually going to read the part that was read. So I will read this little sentence that's right before that, though, that says, "The idea that somehow, someday, they will control and enjoy their drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker." And the reason that I really like more about alcoholism, and especially this section all the way where it goes up until what we tried to do to control our drinking, is because I can really relate to that. I was obsessed with trying to drink normally. I had been sober for almost 10 years when I was 15 until I was 24. And I was never convinced that I was an alcoholic. And as soon as I started drinking again, it was pretty clear that I was an alcoholic. And all I wanted to do was learn how to control my drinking. And I never wanted to come back to these fucking rooms, ever. This was the last place that I wanted to be. And here I am with 2.5 years sober. And I don't want to get drunk. I don't have the desire to be completely inebriated and black out. I got here again because I fell in a blackout and I snapped my collarbone in half. And that was a really harsh hangover the next day also. And it's like, you know, you wake up from the from being wasted and that immediate like pit in your stomach, and then the pain hits and it's like, oh, fuck, that's right, I broke my collarbone. I went through a lot of crazy shit when I started drinking again, and I had some really fun times, like, I'm not gonna lie. I'm really glad that I went out and that I got really fucked up and did a bunch of the things that I did, because it brought me here, and it brought me back very content with being sober again. And I'm really happy that I got to wake up this morning without a hangover. I used to get really fucked up hangovers, and I was just sick for almost 2 days sometimes, and that shit is miserable. Waking up every single weekend, planning my drinking, making sure that I did not have anything to do the next day so that I could go as hard as I wanted to and not have to worry about functioning with a hangover. And so when I got sober, I immediately started working with a sponsor and started working the steps. I went to 90 meetings in 90 days. I really like morning meetings. I think they're a great way to start your day off. And I got commitments. I started going to the old timers group. I don't know if anyone in here has been there, but it's on Mondays at 1 in Oakland. And the majority of the people there have white hair and over 40 years. It's fucking awesome. And they like hooked me in. They were like, oh, you have 30 days, you're gonna be our new coffee maker. And I was like, oh god, I don't know if I want this. But I did it, and I'm really glad that I did, because today I get to live a sober life. And life isn't any different because I'm sober. How I respond to life has changed completely as a result of being sober. I mean, life is different in the sense that my life doesn't revolve around getting fucked up all the time. And I don't have hangovers, and I can function, and I've gone back to school, and I'm able to pursue goals and things that I've wanted to for a really long time that I couldn't. You know, I'm doing nursing prerequisites right now, and I'm taking microbiology, and even just the thought of that, I'm like, what the fuck happened? Like, how am I in this class and how am I even comprehending this information? Because I, about 6 years ago, I had attempted, or maybe 5 years ago, I had attempted to take a communications class and a nutrition class, and I couldn't stop drinking and smoking weed at all. And I just tried to struggle through for about 3 or 4 weeks, and then I dropped the classes. And I was like, well, I'm just never going to become a nurse. Like, that's not for me. And today I get to actually walk through that process. And that's actually a really scary process. And, you know, I feel like going back to school in my 30s is like, it's a test of my spirit. And to see how willing I really am to make shit happen for myself. And so, let's see, what was I going to say before I started talking about that? I can't remember. Oh, my life, how I respond to life. I'm really grateful that we have the steps that we do in this program. I highly, highly suggest working your steps with a sponsor. If there's anyone in here who's like, I'm just going to go to meetings for 10 years and not get a sponsor or work my steps, I wish you the best of luck in your personal relations. Because I know that for myself, like, I'm so fucking sick, and the shit that I experienced out as a result of getting drunk all the time, I need to clean all of that up within myself. And I like to compare it to lugging a giant trash bag full of human feces around with me. I'm just like carrying this giant bag of shit, and it starts to get really fucking stinky, and I start to get irritated and upset about the fact that I have this giant bag of shit behind me that I'm not willing to let go of, and I'm just like taking it everywhere that I go. And throughout my sobriety, I have been able to like cut that bag in half, cut it in half again, just rip away this bag of shit. Don't get me wrong, there's still a little one back there. It might even be bigger than I think that it is, but it's not like it was before. It's not permeating into every second of my life. I destroyed so many relationships when I was drinking. I was scared of making friends with women when I was drinking, because I was a belligerent bitch when I got drunk, and I would just talk shit. And I still talk shit, but not as much. And I'm aware of the shit that I'm talking. And today, the relationships that I value the most in my life are the relationships with women that I have. And I've just been able to do a lot of healing around those relationships. And I've learned how to show up and be a really good friend and a really good partner and a good daughter. And in general, I feel like I've really, my one friend actually told me, who I used to get drunk with all the time. She said, you know, when you were drinking, like, I didn't think that anything was wrong with your life, but now that you're sober, I'm able to see the potential that you have. And that hit something inside of me, because when I first got sober, she was like, oh, that's cool, whatever, good for you. You know, like, it's probably not going to last. We're probably going to be drinking whatever in a few weeks or a month again, like we always do. And this was maybe about 6 months ago that she said that to me. And it really meant a lot, and I'm really glad that I've stuck with it and stayed sober, because I'm just really able to see all of the change that's happened within myself. And I get to do this really cool women's meeting on Tuesdays with Chelsea. And we all, there's seven of us, and we've all worked the steps together. We're starting step 12 next week. And that's been some crazy shit, like walking through with a group of women, a small group of women who are all sober, and we all read our fucking inventories to one another. Ooh. And we get sponsor like feedback from one another, and we also just support one another in our lives and unconditionally show up and love one another. And that's some shit that I could have only dreamed of when I was getting drunk. Like, I had good friends, but it wasn't the same kind of thing that I have today. And it wasn't the same kind of intimacy that I'm able to have with people, with women especially, like I was saying. Like, my female relationships are very intimate and personal, and it's amazing. And that's a gift of being sober. And I remember everything that we talk about. I used to have these long, intense, like, processing life conversations with my girlfriends, and then the next day I would be like, fuck, I know that was a good conversation. I can't remember what the fuck we talked about, though. And today I don't have that. Yeah, if anyone here is new, well, not if, to the people in here who are new, I don't know if this is your first time here or if you're coming back for the third time or 10th time or whatever the fuck, like, I hope that you're done. I had to be done. And I hope that you get it and that you give the steps and having a sponsor a shot, because that shit really does work. I didn't think that it would work for me. I remember when I got sober, I was like, I don't know if it's actually going to work, if that giant bag of shit behind me was actually going to become a small bag of shit that I'm carrying. And it actually worked. Like, I didn't think that I was going to lose the desire to drink. And when that was taken away from me, I was like, the feeling of that is indescribable. The relief that I have over not wanting to get drunk anymore is something that I can't even tell any newcomer of what that feels like. But I was patient. And I think that was something that was really important for me, is that I walked through that shit and just had patience and was willing to just stick around and hoped that the shit that other people talked about, I was going to experience as well. Yeah, I think that's all I've got. Thanks.
Anyway, hi everybody, I'm Paul. I am definitely an alcoholic, drug addict, reformed asshole, you know what I mean? So I just want to say I'm really grateful to be here. You know, I'm so grateful. You know, I remember coming to meetings and hearing somebody say that, and I would just wince and like, what, that you're a fucking loser, and here's your sentence, asshole, you know what I mean? Thank you. You know, because, you know, when you first get clean and sober, you're like, ah, you know, like, how the fuck is this going to be okay? You know, because the drugs and the alcohol is gone, right? Well, I'm one of these ones that I did it until I couldn't do it, and then I did it some more, and then I'm, like, almost dead. Living in out of doors in Berkeley, I was sleeping in Live Oak Park collecting aluminum cans to be 24/7 toxic, right? Because I couldn't get a job, or I don't know what the hell was wrong with me. So I remember being in Live Oak Park one day and with this other dude. He was the heroin addict. I was the drunk dude. And we were like, hey, man, how you doing? You know, and one day I remember saying to the guy, hey, man, I think I'm going to die. I think I'm going to fucking die. Swear to God, I just was so sick. You know, waking up in the morning, and I remember, you know, I would work so hard to get the aluminum cans to get the 40 and the half much vodka as I could get, mix the two together, make some jet fuel, and just, you know, it's nasty, but it did the, you know. Uh-huh. And so, you know, and that was as a result of, see, that's, I got clean, so I'm 63. Not bad, huh? I'm a car mechanic, so we call that freeway miles. Anyway, so, I grew up in Berkeley, and my parents were intellectual, you know, super ass ego, drinking martini, smoking cigarettes with all their smart friends. And we used to drink their drinks on Saturday morning, and when they were all done, yes. You know, and like, yeah. How are you? You know, whatever, and all this kind of shit. I had no idea that that's really how I started drinking. Anyway, so grew up in Berkeley. It was a really fun time, the 60s. You know, I was like, that's when, you know, all the good music came out that we liked. You know, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, all that shit. We couldn't wait for the next album, all that kind of shit. And but anyway, I started smoking pot in junior high school. And then my parents moved to the Berkeley-Albany border, and I had to go to Albany, and they were like 10 years behind Berkeley. Jesus Christ. They're drinking alcohol and taking barbiturates. And we're like, oh my God, how dull. And they like to fight and comb their hair back and, you know, have hot rods. I'm like, okay. Anyway, so I made it through high school, and but it was okay. I just aligned myself with some toughs so I wouldn't get my ass kicked, you know what I mean? And I managed to graduate from high school, and it was a lot of fun, really. And I'm sort of one of these ones, I could skate. I could get the grades and barely pay attention. I don't know, I was just lucky. Certainly didn't get A's, but I made it through, you know? Anyway, so I get out of high school, and I go up to Lake Tahoe to work in the state line. The Harris Club is a busboy, right? Because that's where my best friend would do on summers. So we'd work swing shift 4 to 12, and then they would party till the sun came up. Man, I did that like a couple times. I'm like, holy shit, I am not cut out for that. So I started having my first experiences with what we clinically refer to as toxic psychosis. I don't know if anybody's familiar with that shit. Anyway, so, you know, I'm like going cuckoo, not eating, drinking, you know. God, it was awful. And I really was. And so at the end of the summer, everybody else went on to the college and whatever they were doing. And I, what are you going to do? I don't know, man. You know, like, whoa. And so I was really crazy. So I remember hitchhiking to Santa Barbara, where I was born at, where my dad, who split up with my mom when I was really young, lived. And he's like, oh shit, you know. And he goes, he's like, I got a good idea. Hey, why don't you join the Navy? I'm like, are you fucking what? Are you kidding me? You know, but no, he wasn't. So he talked me into it. And I swear to God, I was still, I was coming down off of LSD and all kinds of shit. I was really already way out there. So somehow I went down there and I went to San Diego boot camp. And I remember being in there and seeing the razor wire and the, you know, coming to a little bit and going, oh, fuck. I guess they, what happened? Where am I? And then you sign the paper 4 years, or you could be subject to federal prosecution. You know, okay, what does that mean? Never mind, just go do what they want you to do. So, fortunately, but see, what's really fun, I didn't know what the hell I was getting into, right? So They're like, did you ever try marijuana? Did you ever try LSD? Blah, blah, blah. So the job availability started going like this. I'm like, oh, no. But somehow I got into naval aviation, and as I could be a hydraulic specialist, airframe mechanic. Apparently, you didn't have to have too high a security clearance to be changing tires and brakes and hydraulic components and shit like that. So I went to A school in Memphis, Tennessee, and I'm thinking, I have no fucking idea what I'm in for, right? So I remember flying there, and that Paul McCartney album had just come out on its own with Jet, you know, or some kind of shit, and I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool. I remember swinging over Memphis and see this lushly green, and I'm thinking, hey, well, this is where Elvis is from, so this is cool. And I get there and I do really good in their schools. I don't know what happened. I got like third out of 29 in just general aviation. So I get these orders to go to Rota, Spain, some spy outfit. And after they send you to a C, that was A school, then they send you to a C school where you're trained on the specific aircraft which you're going to be working on. So I go to No, what happened was, I can't remember, so long ago, I'm 63, this was in 1974, right? So anyway, I ended up going to Patuxent River, Maryland, not far from D.C., and getting trained on the P-3 Orion, which used to be over here at Moffett Field. They stopped using them, and they're actually using some kind of jet. They fly over the ocean, and they look for submarines and ships and this and that. I couldn't tell you more, I'd have to kill you. Yeah. Anyway, so, but anyway, yeah. So I have these orders to go to Rota, Spain. I'm like, Spain, España, okay, you know? So what do? I'm such a fuck up. The night before I'm supposed to ship out, I swear to God, I go to the EM Club, Enlisted Man's Club, and there's supposed to be some band there, and I'm sitting there drinking a pitcher of beer. The band doesn't show up. Drink another pitcher of beer. Band still doesn't show up. And then I come to the next morning at the barracks, and there's a guitar in a case next to me, and I'm like, wow, where'd that come from? Well, apparently in a black yacht, I decided that they never showed up, so I'll just take the guitar back to the barracks. Okay, what am I thinking, right? So that's illegal. So it was called, it's really, you know, theft of a sort, but their technical term was misappropriation or something. And so what that meant, I was getting a summary court martial, captain's mast, they called it. I'm like, holy shit, is this a little early in my career for this kind of shit? You know? And so anyway, so sure enough, they stripped me of my orders to go to Rota, Spain, and sent me instead up to Brunswick, Maine, 4 feet of snow, you know. Good luck to you, son. Kind of shit, you know what I mean? I leave. See, I'm a Jaguar mechanic. I've always been a Jaguar nut since I was a kid. First, I bought 2 cars when I was 17 without my parents' permission. I come home one day, and they're like, "You bought what? Oh my God! Isn't he enough trouble?" So anyway, I've been a Jaguar mechanic all my enthusiastic life, and it's been, you know, great. So anyway, I buy this 53 Jag, looks like a Rolls Royce, called a Mark 7, from some officer in the base in Patuxent River, Maryland, for like $700. It's like green, looks like a Rolls Royce. I'm like, yeah. So I drive that fucking thing up to Brunswick, Maine, and I swear to God, it's cold, it's snowing. It was so cold, the carburetor's kind of distorted, so I was like, oh shit. But anyway, you know, so I'm there briefly, and I start drinking with these guys that think it's a good idea to go rob convenience stores at midnight, and they wanted me to drive, and I'm like no, I don't think so, boys. I mean, luckily they were in a different squadron, but somehow they were being investigated by, they called it NIS back then on TV, they called it NCIS, nah, it was NIS, and there were some, you looked the fuck out for them. So I got caught between them, thinking that I'm going to snitch on them and the authorities, right? I'm like, oh fuck, I just sort of had a breakdown. So they sent me to Rhode Island to some hospital, and this and that, and then I end up going, well, he has a drug problem. So they sent me to Florida, long story short. So when do I got to be quiet? Just let me know. Like,
tomorrow.
What?
Tomorrow.
Anyway, so I go to Florida to this drug rehab, right? And but before I went to Florida, they sent me to some mental hospital in Lewiston, Maine, where ZZ Top had just come. It was in a small venue, I swear to God. They had just made that album, Tres Hombres, and Johnny Cash was there. And they gave me some Thorazine shit that was so powerful. I'm like, I swear to God, what our minds can do for us. I'm seeing the white rabbit sitting next to my bed in a lovely embroidered vest going, "You're going to be okay, my son." I'm like, yeah, you know what I mean? So anyway, I end up going to this drug group rehab down in Florida. And that's where they're just going to, you know, out, here you go, next. And I'm like, I'm thinking to myself, what am I going to do? What the fuck am I going to do? They're going to kick me out. I'll get out of the Navy. Then what am I going to do? So I go, nah, I want to stay in. Is that even possible? The guy looks at me. I remember I was thinking, you know, oh my God, he's not kidding. Okay, I guess we have to give him a chance. So somehow I straightened up and this and that. Despite one guy that I was getting clean with and the thing, he was drinking MD-2020, right? That shit. Oh my God, man, he ended up. See, in Jacksonville, Florida, it's real lush and green and nice, and there's like these lawns are all meticulously cut. Everything's gorgeous. And they got these little grassy culverts, and I distinctly remember, like, where's what's his name? And I'm like, I don't know, let's go look. And he's laying naked in one of them culverts. And we're like, oh, fuck. What the fuck, you know? So anyway, I get through that shit, and they send me out here to Moffett Field. And this was in 1975. By this time, I'd been away from stuff, not by because I consciously chose to do so or any of that shit. I just hadn't been enough, and I kind of youthfully rejuvenated, right? And so I get out here, and I start working at the squadron, and it was, I go there, and they're like, I'm like, oh, good. I'm like, trained as an aviation metalsmith, you know, what's up? And they're like, okay, he sent him to the chow hall for 3 months to wash dishes. Get up at 4 in the fucking morning, and oh, God. So I finally get over there, and I'm working with them. And it was really fun. We get to go to Japan. 9 aircraft in the squadron. There was about 3 or 4 squadrons there. And so 9 planes were stateside for a year, and then the whole squadron flies over to Japan. Mainland Japan. Can you imagine this shit? And, you know, they fly us over an airliner via Hawaii. I'd never been to Hawaii. So we go to Hawaii, and what do? We go over to some guy's house off the plane directly, don't leave the room and getting high the whole time, get back on the plane, and then fly to Japan. You know, I sort of remembered that wonderful floral smell when you get off a plane in Hawaii, you know? Anyway, so we get to Japan. And I'm so fucking crazy. I'm from Berkeley, right? So I knew what marijuana plants looked like. This was in 1975. And my buddy's from, like, Kansas. The other dude's from, like, wherever the fuck they were from. And they're like... And so we're out. We go to these wrecking yards. And we get these little Japanese motorcycles. And we just get, hey, let's just get that one going. We got a couple of them going. We're just riding all over the fucking place out in the country. And I'm riding down the road one day, and there's a fork in this road, dirt road, and there's like a 5-foot-tall weed plant growing. And I'm like, oh, my God. I go, you know. And I'm like, what the fuck? And I go, do you know what this is? And they're like, no, man, what is it? My friends from, you know, wherever they're from. And it's like, this is a weed plant, dude. Holy shit. So we started seeing them, and we just cut them down, hang them up underneath some trees off the way, and then come back a couple weeks later. Hey, look, let's package it up. So I don't know if anybody remembers that TV show, McHale's Navy. I'm pretty old, right? Well, they always had a racket going because you don't get paid enough in the Navy, right? So it was sort of like the McHale's Navy. We were selling all this weed to the fucking Air Force dudes. And it started to be a problem. The fucking commanding officers and the what, they were like, what the fuck is going on? And somehow it came down to like, I'm like, I don't know. You know, like this. And so me and 3 other dudes, they zeroed it down to us, right? And I'm like, and so what happened was they used to do these dog searches. They come through the barracks, and they're like, row, row, row. Ah, let's fucking lay it all out right now. And so they got me for some flex in my pocket. And I was like, oh, shit. And so we were just about to come home on... And they take us to some holding thing and this and that, and basically, you're fucked. We figured out where the source of this fucking bullshit was, and so, good luck, son. You know, but anyway, so they're just about to leave, and I'm thinking, they're saying 7 years in prison, rice, dungeon. You know, I'm like, oh, my God, I'm scared. I swear to God, I'm scared. I'm like 20. And so then when, right before the squadron leaves, the shore patrol van shows up, this gray van, and these guys are all, they got guns on, and they're like this, and they're like, get in the fucking van right now. And we're like, oh my God, they're just going to go kill us. You know what I mean? And so they took us back to the base, and they're just like, it's just, go get your shit and get on the plane right the fuck now. I'm like, what? So I swear to God, I don't know what happened. So we go home, and I'm like, hey, what happened? What happened? And they're just like, they're just shaking their heads going, shut the fuck up and just do what you're supposed to do, right? So then, but here, the one last funny thing about that story was, Jesus Christ, these planes are pretty big, right? So they have these flaps that come down, and there's this big space inside each of the wheel, flap wells and what. And so this one dude, I still remember his name, AO3 Crawford. That's Aviation Ordnance. He was a total stoner from, like, Kentucky. He goes, hey, boys, we're out there doing a flight line one day, you know, down the jack screws and the this and the that. And then he goes, hey, guys, come here. Let me show you something. And he gets this ladder, and he goes up there, and he comes down with this big old box. And he goes, guess what this is? I'm like, we're like, oh, fuck. Fuck you, man. He brought some of that shit home. But anyway, so anyway, I can't believe it. I think what saved my ass was I was like a stoner Berkeley dude. I loved art and shit growing up. I really liked Peter Max and Stan Lee comics. So I merged the two together, put the Stan Lee characters in the Peter Max backgrounds and shit. And so, where's I going with that? I don't know. But I know. So it was 1976, right? It was the bicentennial for the United States of America. So I'm like reduced to corrosion control in the air, in the squadron, because we're such fuck ups. And that's even though I'm a like 20-year-old driving an XK150 Jag to work, and these ensigns just a year or two older than me, they're driving like these little economy cars. You know, they're all like, you know, whatever. I'm just like, yeah, you know. Anyway, so where was I going with that now? So it was bicentennial commemoration. So there was this contest, right, to design a logo for the plane. And I thought, sitting there with... You know, so I designed this thing where it's two fields of stars under the cockpit windows. This is a big plane, right? And then star and two red and white stripes coming back from that. And I fucking won the contest. I'm like, holy shit. And so they're like, yeah, get your fucking dress uniform on. And they had General Assembly or whatever what was, and the whole squadron. And then I had to go up and, you know, and they presented me with this thing. And the skipper, he's a 05. You know, there's big, you know, the scrambled eggs on the hat. And he goes, and so here you go. You know, Petty Officer Third Class Verdiac, job well done. You know what? It was that next deployment that we got into all that dope trouble, so I think that might have had something to do with it. I don't fucking know, or God or something. Anyway, so I get out of the Navy. I decide to get out of the Navy at the end of the 4 years, you know, and I don't know what I was thinking. I'm going to use my GI Bill and just go to college in Santa Barbara. Surfing, partying, oh boy, you know what I mean? So I get there, and I find these guys that have Jaguars in their yard. And I'm like, oh good, I'm working here. Because I just want to change my oil and make sure the car is running right. A little that I know that these guys were coke dealers at the wholesale level, right? And I'm like, this was in 1978. So I'm like, oh, whatever, man. Okay. You know, so I've been working with them. And then every Friday, the parking lot would jam up with people. And they were like, I'm telling this other dude, when I was first working there, I was like, hey, what the fuck? We didn't work on his car, and who the fuck is that? And they go, oh. So, you know, put two and two together. Next thing I know, we got the little snow seal bindles. I never did it like this, thank God, because the fucking doctor had to chase me around the office to give me a shot when I was a kid. So that was cool. You know what I mean? I was too scared to do that shit. But so I just got hooked on cocaine with, you know, it turned dark purple. Okay, we'll take it kind of stuff, you know. And so I was working for these guys, and this is really important to mention, because I turned a 30-year alcohol career into like 4 years. I mean, bam, because you get such a tolerance for the two that they fired me. Can you believe it? They're like, you got to go. And I'm like, fire, you know, whoa. And so sure enough, that was my first experience with being a street person, just toxic psychosis, really bad, right? So I had to go do a stretch down there. It's only 6 months for, you know, what was it? 3 drunk drivings in 2 months. You know, a little bad patch there. And then drunk in public, petty theft, you know, real glamorous stuff, right? So the guy's looking, I remember being in court and looking at all the things, and he's like shaking his head, you know, Jesus Christ. And so, hey, what we'll do it to just clear it all up? You know, and he goes, 6 months. Bam. So I go there. And it was a piece of cake. They put me on the honor farm, and I did 4 months out of 6. We just went out and trimmed weeds with the vests on. But I got poisoned up pretty bad one time, and it was bad. But anyway, so I get out of there, and while I'm in jail, this guy I got friends with. I told him that my granny was pretty rich down there, and she had some inheritance for me, and someday, and we're dreaming, and, you know, well, what are you going to do when you get out of here? And then... he goes, well, you should talk her into give you some money now. You need it now, brother. So he coached me, right? So I get out of jail. My granny, God love her, I said, Grandma, yeah, I don't know what I'm going to do, but I should leave here and go to school up in Berkeley, where I grew up. And she's like, okay, honey, are you sure? Whatever, you know? And so she gives me like $6,000, which at age 23 and a half or whatever it was more money than I'd ever seen in one place at one time, right? So I'm like, oh my God, I'm rich. So I get on the train, and I had been clean and sober for, you know, a stretch there, almost 6 months. And I was feeling pretty good. And I thought it was a good idea to have a beer on the train. I could have a beer, right? So I just start having it in the sky car. So, you know, like we're like, nice trip. And by the time I got here, I was so drunk, it just literally poured me off the train, right? And I stayed with my mom and my stepfather in the house that I grew up in. And life went to shit real quick. I came up here, I put that money in the bank on Solano Avenue in Berkeley, and I just would take out $10 to $15 a day, go buy a six of Mickey's and something, and go sit in the park and figure out what to do. Oh my God, I paid for a room 3 months in advance up in the Berkeley Hills. Summer came, I got out of jail in March of 1983. And by the end of the summer, I was out of my fucking mind. I was homeless. I was just walking around the streets of Berkeley, filthy, dirty. You know, you saw me across the street kind of guy, right? So I get rescued. One day, I'm coming to. I just finished off a vodka and whatever, and I'm laying by one of these creeks that comes down through the Berkeley Hills off of Tevlin and Gilman. And some guy's across, he's watering his plants like there, and he sees some stirring across the thing. And he's like, oh my, you know, gee, let me put the hose down and let's see what, oh dear. You know, he goes over there, and I'm like, I'm laying there, I don't know if it's fucking morning or evening. And he goes, are you all right? And I'm like, what do you think, asshole, you know what I mean? And he worked at Newbridge Foundation up here in Berkeley Hills. And I did not hear the clouds part and the, you know, yeah, like, you know, here's your chance to save yourself, Paul. No. You know what I heard? I heard 3 meals a day and a bed. Sign me up, man. So I go up there, and then it was really hard because this program was modeled after EST. It was like, 10 minutes. Okay, good. Thank you. So it was modeled that sort of attack therapy. They throw you in the middle of your peers so you can't bullshit a bullshitter kind of thing, right? And so these therapy programs emerged, and they do things like you'd have to stand in front of a mirror and look at yourself for 10 minutes to reflect on your behavior. Oh, my God. I swear to God, I start melting and shit, and I'm like fucked up still, right? Or you have to sit on the bench in front of the mirror for a week from 8 to 5 because of your behavior. And I remember I had gotten through the program. It was an 18-month program. The first 9 months were in-house, really regimented, really tough. But I needed that shit. Hit over the head with a 2x4, you know what I mean? And I get to the 9 months where they reassimilate you with the community. They figure you're okay, so they... You live there, and then you go out, and I got a job immediately as a journeyman car mechanic, making big money right away, bam. And it sort of helped that my brother, a year younger's best friend's older brother, owned the business, right? It was Tony and John's in Telegraph Avenue across from Willard. And so I was good, real good. And then the head mechanics, they were like so glad to have some guy that didn't have to hold his hand and hey, Jesus Christ, you know. So they're like on a Friday, they're like, hey, you got to have a beer with us, man. We're happy. We're getting some shit done around here. And I knew, you know how you got the devil here and the little angel here? The little angel was going, I don't think so, Paul. I don't think you should do that. Don't listen, you know? And I'm like, fuck. After a couple times, I'm like, fuck it. I could have a beer. So I have a beer with those guys. And I swear to God, 5 days later, I don't need Newbridge anymore. I'm hallucinating already. I remember working on a V6 Volvo. They called it the soup bowl. And I'm hallucinating so much, I'm just like, useless. So I get fired from, I don't need Newbridge, I get fired from the job. I'm standing in People's Park drinking a fifth of vodka with three other guys I don't even know. I wake up in Berkeley jail. I'm like, how the fuck did this happen again? And somehow, I'm just going to wrap it up. You know? But I ended up being so sick that I had to go to a detox out in Richmond, given bus fare by Berkeley Support Services. You know? Good luck. And I was so sick, I had to drink the bus fare just to not be going to a seizure, right? Sure enough, I get to Hallama Detox out here in Richmond. This was in whatever it was. And I started to have withdrawals, and I had a grand mal fucking seizure. And I don't even know what happened. I was in a coma for a week.
Wow.
And luckily, I was a veteran, see? And so they sent me to the Yountville Veterans Home. And otherwise, I'd be dead. I don't know what the fuck would happen, you know? So anyway, I'm scared to death to drink anymore. This is after a year sobriety, then a year relapse, roughly. I just go, you know what? I'm just going to live at the fucking veterans home. And if and they'll feed me, and this is all I get, thank you, God. You know? And then, so it was a 90-day program, right? So at the end of the 90 days, they're like, congratulations, you can go now. I'm like, fuck, where, man? And then I remember the person looking at me across the desk and going, whoa. Hey, you can just do the 90-day program again. How about that? I'm like, shh. So halfway through the 90-day program again, this call comes up. Hey, are you Paul? And I'm like, oh no, they found me. You know, creditors. You know how we are. And like, and so they're, no, this is the Berkeley Support Services down in Berkeley. We have a check for $7,000, and your SSI has been approved. Swear to God, you can see the phone hanging here, the dust cloud right here. And I'm like, and so I get down here, and the guy quickly realizes, oh, we better not give him all the money at one time. So they meted it out to me a little bit. But then shortly after a couple months, they just go, hey, man, you're doing good. But fortunately, I was so scared to drink anymore, I was going to meetings in Berkeley morning, noon, and night, right? So I just like, I'm safe here. And then one last thing I did that was so fucking stupid. I get that money, and I tell myself, you know what? I have never had a Harley Davidson before. This is after going, God, you know what? You know, if you give me that money, apartment, go back to school, blah, blah, blah. As soon as that fucking money crossed my hot little hand, I'm like, I don't know where that thought came from. So I go buy a 66 FLH Harley for $2,500. I'm like, whoa. I'm riding it all around Berkeley with a t-shirt, pre-helmet law, going, yeah, I love sobriety. You know, and then it's starting to get dark. And I'm like, well, what the fuck are you gonna do now, smart guy? So I park on the side of this apartment building on Virginia Street because there was a couch there. I was all used to being homeless. And I'm going, you fucking idiot! Now what are you gonna do? So I go to a meeting, and I say, hey, I'm so fucking stupid. I fucking bought a Harley Davidson instead of getting an apartment. And some guy comes up to me and goes, hey man, you can rent a room. They got me indoors and blah blah blah. Anyway, so I better end it here, but I just want to say, if you're as crazy as I was, and you're having problems and you think you can't make it, if I can make it, anybody can make it. So you just got to don't drink no matter what. Regulate your physiology. Stay hydrated like you do for your pet. Eat better. You know, don't overdo it. Just pay attention. Go to meetings like you went to the liquor store and the dope man. And start looking around here, who's got what you want. And you know, like they're happy, they're friendly, their nose is wet, and they look at you. You know, just, I swear to God, I got a life I never knew I'd want now, and then some. I'll just end this with a quote. I heard somebody say the other day, God had in mind for me what I couldn't even imagine for myself. You know, I'm like, is there any Kleenex here? I'm kidding. But I swear to God, it got me. You know what I mean? Like, I swear to God, I own property. I own a fucking warehouse, a business, a house. I got everything. You know what I mean? And I owe it all to Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys who show up regularly to fucking keep this thing going. So, you know, anyway, I guess that's it for now. But I'm so honored to be asked to share. Nobody ever used to want to hear what I had to say. You know what I mean? So, you know what? Thank you guys. And I'm fucking mean it. Thank you.